The following is a rebroadcast of Studio Tulsa. This program first aired last year.
Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Watch commercial television for a few hours and you'll notice it. Americans are aging, well, how do I put it? Reluctantly, and using every drug, exercise regimen, and diet around to forestall aging's effects. Perhaps the scariest symptom of aging is mental decline. We can handle physical limitations, but dementia or Alzheimer's? Well, these are our darkest fears. So how can we avoid that outcome? Today, there are game sites on the internet that offer increases in neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to adapt. But my guest today says there are actually better ways to actually grow the brain. Dr. Majid Fatouhi is an acclaimed neurologist and neuroscientist who spent 25 years on the faculties of Johns Hopkins and Harvard Medical School before creating the Brain Center, where he is the chief medical officer. His approach blends exercise, diet, meditation and stress relief, healthy sleep and brain stimulus that can actually grow the brain's hippocampus. He's written a book that outlines the process and the benefits in Boost Your Brain, the New Art and Science Behind Enhanced Brain Performance. It's published by HarperOne. Dr. Majid Fatouhi is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Dr. Fatouhi, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
This new book, Boost Your Brain, offers a training program to increase brain performance. And not surprisingly, a brain is like any other muscle. You have to exercise it and you have to be fit. But before we talk about the actual program, you know, it's a fact that as we age, our brain shrinks. And I think most people think that as we age, we're going to lose neurons, we're going to lose neural connections, and that's just sort of a given. But what you have found is that we can still expand the size of our brain and the power of our brain as we age through proper exercise, diet, sleep, stress relief, and using the brain and various activities.
Yeah, I think it is important for people to realize that, just like you said, Rich, your brain is very much like a muscle. And just like if you don't use your muscles, they tend to shrink with aging, your brain will have a tendency to shrink with aging as well. In fact, on average, people's brain, and especially their memory part of the brain called hippocampus, which is the size of your thumb, shrinks by about 0.5% per year after age 50. This means that over 10 years, again, on average, the memory parts of the brain can shrink by about 5%. And the hippocampus, which is critical for your ability to remember names and phone numbers, is the most sensitive part of the brain to aging. However, you can also do things to increase the size of your hippocampus, and that's what's new and exciting.
Now, one of the things you do in the very beginning of the book is you use an engine metaphor to describe most people's brain health. You say, you know, most of our early life, we're operating on six cylinders, and as we age and if we don't continue to exercise our brain, we don't continue to exercise and make the sort of healthy habits, we might move down to four. But you say, you know, with proper instruction and, again, getting back to diet, health, and using your brain to boost these activities, you can be eight cylinders.
Yes, absolutely. You know, here in our NeuroExpand brain centers, we have patients who come here with complaints of their memory, and they can't remember five or six things. And by the time they leave and they complete our 3-month program, they can memorize 100 or 200 items. And this is in part for two reasons. Number one is that we tap into the part of the brain they're not using. You know, with that six-cylinder versus four-cylinder engine, you know, people, especially in their 50s and 60s, are sort of going back to using four cylinders even though they have six cylinders. And those two extra cylinders are just sitting there unused. And what we do with our patients, we teach them how to tap into those extra reserves. It's called brain reserve. And some of these things are healthy aging, healthy lifestyle to reduce the effects of aging, and there are more to it, and I'll tell you in a minute. But the second thing we do is to help people have two extra cylinders, and that it refers to the fact that we can increase the size of your hippocampus. That is just amazing, Rich. If somebody told me this 10 years ago, I would have not believed them, to say the least. But now that we are doing it, and now that other studies have shown it is possible to increase the size of your hippocampus, we are very aggressive in helping our patients reach that. And so, in part, we help them tap into those two extra cylinders that are not used, and in part, we help them create two extra cylinders.
We think as the brain ages and it shrinks, it begins to atrophy, we're going to lose neurons, we're going to lose neural connections. But what we find is that the brain is amazingly adaptable, and if you're exercising it, it may lose some neurons and neural connections, but it's growing new ones, even pretty late in life.
Yes, absolutely. So let me tell you an example of a study that's just shown that. If you put a group of rats in a cage with a running wheel in it versus rat in a cage that doesn't have a running wheel and just let them be, those who have a running wheel will actually exercise. You know, their tendency is to jump on the running wheel and run around. After 3 months, if you take those rats from each cages and examine their brain under a microscope, you will see that the group that exercised had far more newer, brandly created neurons in their hippocampus. And the group that didn't exercise would have some, but nowhere near the number of new cells in the exercising group. This is one of the evidences that support the concept that you can generate new brain cells with exercising your muscles. There's no surgery, there's no implant, you don't have to see a neurosurgeon, and yet you have stem cells in your brain. Now, your brain can also grow through other ways. You know, one way is to grow new neurons, but another way your brain can increase in size is through better vascular supply and increased blood flow. And when you exercise, you increase blood flow and you generate new blood vessels throughout your brain, and especially in the memory parts of the brain.
Now, you actually, for the book, your co-author actually sort of did an unscientific study where she began an exercise regime. You did some tests and I guess did an MRI and looked at the size of her hippocampus prior to starting this. And after she does an exercise program for what, about 12 weeks?
Correct, uh-huh.
She saw the hippocampus grow by, what was the?
5%. So she started the program in February, and in May, she had the second MRI, and the brain MRI shows that her hippocampus has grown by 5%, which is equivalent to about being 10 years younger in sort of brain age. And we did cognitive testing on her, and her brain performance increased by 15%. And this was a clear example of how doing our program can improve brain size and brain function. Now, you know, every person is different, and I think that's the one point we emphasize in the book. Exercise is good for someone, but if another person has a different medical condition, that person may need different treatments. For example, if somebody is overweight and snores at night and feels tired through the day, or they find that they need to take a nap in the afternoon, that person may have obstructive sleep apnea. This is a condition that shrinks your brain by about 18% if it goes untreated. Now, if I find a patient who comes to me with concerns about his or her memory, and I find that that person has obstructive sleep apnea, the number one priority for that person becomes treatment of sleep apnea. Another patient may have vitamin D deficiency. Yet another patient may have B12 deficiency. Yet another patient may have too much stress in their life. And what our book offers and what we provide for our patients in our brain centers is to first do an evaluation and find out what are the specific issues to cause memory loss for each individual person. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, set up a priority plan and then go step by step to address those issues.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the program. My guest today is Dr. Majid Fotouhi, the Chief Medical Officer of the Brain Center. Prior to opening the Brain Center, he taught neurology at Johns Hopkins and Harvard Medical School for over 25 years. And he's the author of Boost Your Brain, The New Art and Science Behind Enhanced Brain Performance. It's published by Harper One. Let's talk about that inventory. First of all, you're looking at overall health. Do you exercise? Do you eat well? Give us a sense of the things that you look at when you start upon a program like this.
Yeah, I do. I like the word you use, an inventory. You know, I do a head-to-toe inventory to determine the potential causes for memory loss in each and every one of our patients, which is, again, outlined in the book. So we start from the head. You know, do we have anxiety problems? Do we have insomnia issues? You know, and then we go to the eyes. Do you have trouble with the vision? You know, if somebody can't see well, that could contribute to their ability to acquire new information and not be able to remember them later. We check people's hearing. Then, you know, check about diet, what you put in your mouth. And then you check thyroid in your neck. Check blood flow in your neck, because people with blockage in their carotid arteries are more likely to experience brain shrinkage and memory loss. Then we go to your lungs. If you have breathing problems, if you have COPD or emphysema, you're not going to be able to provide sufficient oxygen to your brain, and we need to treat those effectively in order to improve oxygenation to your brain. We definitely look at your heart. People with heart problems can't pump enough blood to their brain and can't think straight. And so in order to improve their cognitive function, we need to see how we can tune up their heart, you know, go to stomach. If people have GI issues, diarrhea, they may have absorption problems. And, you know, if you look at testicles and genital areas, when you look at hormones, you know, men with low testosterone may have memory problems. Women, if they go through menopause and hormonal issues, may affect their memory. And then go to your knees. If you have arthritis or pain, are you taking pain medications? Those things can, you know, affect your memory. And go to your toes. You know, if you have numbness in your toes, maybe the early signs of diabetes, which is one of the major cause of memory loss in those patients. So we do a head-to-toe inventory, and then we come up with 5 or 6 things for each individual patient. And then we sort of go after those and treat them in terms of most important one being first. So again, if someone has sleep problems, that becomes number one priority.
One thing you didn't mention then, but you did mention earlier, was vitamin D deficiency. And I don't know, a lot of doctors are talking about that, especially primary care physicians, as far as making sure they have enough vitamin D. How important is this to brain health?
It's very important. Vitamin D is involved in many, many reactions inside brain cells and in nerves that extend from your spinal cord to your extremities. And low vitamin D can cause fatigue, memory loss, sort of brain fog, difficulty with attention and concentration. It is easy to fix, and I really think nobody should walk around with a low vitamin D these days, because it's easy to test and easy to treat. And patients can see benefits rather quickly. Vitamin D deficiency is also common. I find 2 or 3 patients will have low vitamin D every week. So I think it's something that everyone should be aware of, and they need to have their blood checked if they have any symptoms. If you're perfectly fine and have no symptoms, obviously there's no urgency for you to check your vitamin D. But if you have a brain fog, difficulty with concentration, you want to check your vitamin D. You want to check your B12 level, which is extremely important for brain health. You also need to know whether or not you have anemia or iron deficiency. Rich, one of the things that I find interesting is that when people have memory problems, they just jump on the possibility for Alzheimer's disease.
Yes.
They don't realize that they can have 20 things that can affect their memory, most of which are treatable, and they don't seek treatment, and instead they worry about what the worst case scenario could be. And I really hope that through my public lectures, through my book, I can educate the public that if you have memory concerns or memory issues, talk to your doctor and find out what are some of the issues for you. And plan on improving your memory by 20 to 200%. You can do it. You'll be amazed at how much you can improve your brain and your memory. So be assertive, find out what's the problem, and fix it.
Earlier you were talking about at your center, people go through the program and they can memorize long lists of words or sets of numbers or a deck of cards. How does this promote overall brain health? Is it just a matter of like dumbbells for your arm muscles? It's just powering the brain as a muscle?
Yes. When you memorize names, you're actually strengthening your memory muscles. you're making your hippocampus bigger. Now, let's take an extreme case of someone who learns a new language. People have done studies among college kids who are just doing a regular program versus those who enroll in an intensive language program for 3 months. This is, for example, young soldiers who are being transferred to, let's say, Iraq, and they need to learn Arabic in 3 months. And so they put them in an intensive program, like 8 to 10 hours a day for 3 months. And let's compare their brain to brains of college kids who just go to college and they have just the usual load of memorizing things. They find that those who receive intensive language training and had to memorize things had significant, noticeable increase in the size of their hippocampus. In other words, practicing to memorize things strengthens and expands your hippocampus, which is the memory part of your brain. And the more you do these things, the better you will get at it. So I often encourage my patients to sort of push their memory as far as they can, because by doing that, they're building new brain cells and they're building their hippocampus. In one way, you can think of hippocampus as like a retirement plan. The more you have in your retirement plan, the better off you'll be when you get to your senior years.
Yes.
The same applies to your hippocampus. The bigger it is, the more likely you are to have sharp memory in your 80s. So if you want to plan ahead, start memorizing things now. And if you want to do cognitive, computer-based exercises, focus on those that tease and push your memory more so than those who may, for example, help you with numbers.
Now I'm going to get back to the language idea, because that is one of the activities that is helpful. You know, I think there's a belief that you can learn languages easier when you're young, but by the time you get to, say, you and I's age in our early 50s, it's very difficult to pick up a new language. Is that necessarily true?
Well, I think it's fair to say it is true. It is true that your brain has a lot more plasticity when you're a kid or a teenager, and your ability to acquire new information is much better, you know, when you're younger. However, this is not to say that you cannot memorize a new language or improve your memory in your 50s, 60s, or 80s. Mm-hmm. You just have to be patient, because it's a little slower. The same applies to your running. You know, people don't complain about the fact that when they're in their 50s, they don't run as fast as they did when they were in their 20s. Yes, it's true. However, if they train hard enough, they can improve. And in fact, those who do marathon or triathlon training run and perform much better than people in their 20s. The same applies to your brain. If you train your brain, it can function better than people who are much younger. It may just be a little slower.
Now, in your 12-week course, it involves exercise, diet, stress relief of various types, and then activities that stimulate the brain. Is it really interesting that you take three tracks for each of these areas? If you are doing the right things, you start on track three. If you're doing some of the right things, you start on track two. And if you're not doing any of the right things, you start on track one and eventually move up. And really, as far as exercise, if you're sedentary, you're not doing anything, walking and slowly increasing the intensity and length of your walks 3 times a week, this does the trick?
Yes. I find that a lot of people have the best intentions to improve their fitness, to eat better, to reduce the stress, to improve their sleep, to do a lot of things. However, the reality of life is that they have things to do, and they just know they don't have time to get there. And what we do in our brain centers and also in the book is to offer a program that's suitable for individual patients. If you have not done anything aerobic and somebody tells you exercise 45 minutes 5 days a week, you're just not going to do it.
That's
right. Your body's not ready. Your mind is not ready. And because it's too much, you won't even start. What we do for our patients and for our readers is to say, okay, well, give me 5 minutes. Don't tell me you don't have 5 minutes. You do. And then, you know, we'll make that 5 minutes 7 minutes and then 10 minutes. And we find that many people are agreeable to that. And once they start a program, let's say 10 minutes three times a week, they're more likely to make it 15 minutes three times a week and then 20 minutes three times a week, and they feel better and they may increase it further. And once they are there, some exercise is better than no exercise, and there are benefits. Many of these studies that have looked at brain health and brain size have used participants who walked, let's say 30 minutes or 45 minutes, three or four times a week. They did not have people run a marathon. It is really interesting that the exercise does not have to be strenuous to see the best results. And so 3 hours of exercise is not three times better than 1 hour exercise. The best benefit comes from some exercise compared to no exercise, and moderate exercise to little to no exercise. And then once you go beyond that, the incremental benefit is less.
You go through the same thing with diet, and it's interesting that I think what you recommend basically is what I've always heard is the diabetes diet. Fill half your plate with green vegetables, a little starch, a little protein, very little dairy, and that's probably the best way to go.
Yeah, and again, you know, what I want people to do is to start a book or start a program with the idea that I'm going to be much better in 3 months. I'm going to have the best memory I've had in my life in 3 months. Now, what am I going to do? Tell me what to do. And start the program with that kind of expectations of themselves, and then do the program the way we have outlined it. In other words, do different things the way we have put it together. And we have charts that people can use to sort of monitor their progress. And for each intervention we talk about, we start at their level. We make it easy for them to get started and to move forward. And when it comes to diet, for example, the first thing to do is cut out French fries. I mean, for 2 weeks, please do me a favor. Don't eat French fries. I mean, it's difficult, but you want your memory to be better. French fries has very little nutrition to offer, and the salt is definitely not good for you. And if that's all you do for 2 weeks, I'm very grateful for that. You know, and then the next thing is, you know, when you go to work, take an apple or a banana or small container of yogurt or some nuts for your dessert, I mean for your snacks. And if you see that chocolate chip cookie, just say, look, I'm just going to have a small little bite and then not eat the whole thing. See, these are the little steps that are doable, you know. And then move on. And once you achieve that, then go to the next level. And ultimately, you eat a very healthy diet.
I want to talk in our last few minutes about meditation, because there's a big section on meditation and its ability to harness, create alpha waves, which are important for brain health. What are the medical benefits of something like meditation and other stress relief valves?
Yeah. Stress is a silent killer of your brain cells. If you can do, remember when I started talking to you, you know, we decided to set priorities. If somebody has a stressful lifestyle, my number one recommendation would be to reduce the stress in each and every way possible. This means, you know, they can do some breathing exercises. In the book, we offer some breathing exercises that help. And remember, you know, your brain is worth a lot. Don't ruin it over, you know, traffic issue while you're driving to work in the morning. Your brain is too precious. Don't lose your brain cells with unnecessary stress. I mean, yes, there are times that your life is stressful and you know, you just have to deal with it. But spare little things from damaging your brain. And then make sure that, you know, you're organized. You know, write 6 or 7 things you can do in any given day and do those things, and don't always blame yourself for the fact that you're not doing the 30 things that need to be get done that day and go home and feel guilty. And then once again, the same thing as we talked about with diet or exercise, we give people baby steps to sort of reach the ideal brain health. And meditation is one of those wonder interventions, you know, meditation is one of the most wonderful interventions for brain health, because it's not just stress reduction. It actually helps to increase blood flow to your brain. Studies have shown that meditators experience an increase in blood flow in their brain compared to those who don't. And many studies have shown that your hippocampus, that memory part of the brain, grows when you're meditating. So when you meditate, when you sit down in a quiet room and repeat a mantra and close your eyes and sort of relax your mind, you're actually performing construction and rebuilding inside your brain. Not only you're relaxing and sort of feeling less stress during those 20 minutes, but you're rehabilitating your brain. And that's why people who meditate tend to have better memory. They have better blood flow in their brain. The connections in the brain work better, so they can connect the dots better.
I was also struck by some of the substitutes. Tai Chi was one, but another, drumming. Drumming circles are somewhat popular today. That can be a very effective stress reducer.
Yes. If you sit down with a group of people and you engage in a rhythmic drumming as a group, something happens. There's something about the fact that you're in unison with a group of people, much the same way you may feel in a singing in a choir. And having done it myself, I was actually pleasantly surprised how much better I felt afterwards. It's important to remember these things have benefits while you do them for at least 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, ideally 12 weeks. Because just like if you go for a walk one day, you're not going to experience an increase in your fitness. You would have to do it on a regular basis for at least 2 or 3 months in order to get to the habit and also see the benefits. And therefore, my recommendation to people is to start any of these habits that we recommend in the book slowly, but stick with it, realizing that in 3 months, you will have an amazing memory, which I tell you, this is one of the most gratifying thing I experience. When patients come with concern for their memory, they start a program, and then they say, what did you do to me? I didn't realize I could memorize 100 things forward and backwards, you know. An 85-year-old who memorized 50 things says, I'm impressing my grandchildren. And it goes back to what we started, the 4-cylinder, 6-cylinder, 8-cylinder analogy. It really helps you get to your 6-cylinder. And if you really are serious, you can get to that extra brain power. And it is within reach. It's not like you have to do something for 10 years to see benefits. 2 or 3 months really make a huge difference. And you can see the difference yourself and your family members notice. And it's not just memory. People say, I feel better, I'm more relaxed, my mind is at ease, the fog has been cleared. The interventions, especially when they're done in a systematic way, in a targeted way, work. See, the thing is, if you just tell someone go exercise, or if you just tell people go do computer games, it's not going to work if that's not their problem. If someone's problem is vitamin D deficiency, and they keep doing those computer games, they may have some benefit, but the underlying biological problem remains. And that's why we need to have a systematic, personalized approach to brain health.
The book is titled Boost Your Brain, The New Art and Science Behind Enhanced Brain Performance. Dr. Fotouhi, thanks very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Neurologist Dr. Majid Fotouhi speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He is the Chief Medical Officer and founder of the Brain Center and the author of Boost Your Brain, The New Art and Science Behind Enhanced Brain Performance. It's published by Harper One. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.